Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 123. I'm recording it on Saturday, April 18th, 2009. The Peak 10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The title of this particular selection is Whimsy Groove. The title of the podcast is The Time Value of Money in Stocks. This one's going to blow your little mind. It blew my little mind. Here's a question. Puzzle me this, Batman. Is it possible? You understand that, I presume that you've listened to earlier podcasts, at least one or two, and at PassionSaving.com and at John Walter Russell's site, Early Retirement Planning Insights, early-retirement-planning-insights.com. We argue for a new model of understanding how stock investing works. We reject the passive investing model that says valuations do not matter. Stocks are always best for the long run. Timing doesn't work. Just don't change your stock allocation, regardless of how insane prices get. That's the old model. We reject that model, and we argue for a new model we call rational investing, or the strategy we advocate is valuation-informed indexing, which means you change your allocation in response to dramatic price changes. So when prices get totally out of control, you lower your stock allocation. When prices are very low, you go with an even higher stock allocation than you normally would. And we've researched the historical data every way you can. And it always shows that this approach, valuation-informed investing, does far better than the passive investing model. And of course it makes sense. Everything else we buy, we look at price. And if we buy at a low price, we get a strong value proposition. If we buy at a high price, we get a poor value proposition. With stocks, for some reason, we do everything upside down. The experts advise us to ignore price entirely, pay no attention to it. It would be dangerous to consider price, some say. Be a mistake. But when we actually look at the historical data, what we find is, no, that's not so. If you buy stocks at good prices, you do incredibly well. And if you buy stocks at poor prices, you do incredibly poorly. So price matters with stock investing just as it does with everything else. And the key is that when you time the market, which timing means to change your stock allocation, that you not expect a benefit from that within 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, because it is true what the experts say, short-term timing doesn't work. But if you change your stock allocation because of price and you stick with the new allocation for at least 5 years, and sometimes it can take as long as 10 years, you always end up ahead. Always end up better off. Now, I was thinking about an aspect of this morning, and a thought struck me, and I ran to one of my calculators, the most recent calculator that John Walter Russell helped me develop. John did all the statistical work, and I asked all the annoying questions. The new calculator is called the Investment Strategy Tester. You can check it out at the website. Go to my website or John's website, and along the left-hand side, there's a button for Strategy Tester. You can go to the calculator. I said, the question I was puzzling was, is it possible? You see, I've been arguing, going back to May 2002 on discussion boards and websites and blogs and all this sort of thing, the podcast, articles at the site. I've been saying, you know, there's going to be a huge price crash. It's inevitable. We've gone to these price levels, the price levels that we went to from 1995 through the first part of 2008. We have gone to those price levels three earlier times in history, and every single time we did it, we saw a huge price crash. Price crash of an average price drop of 68%. And we've never had a price crash of that magnitude when we were not at those sorts of price levels. So I would say that that's a pretty strong case that what common sense tells us must be true, that stocks just don't offer that good a value proposition at those insane price levels, but that at normal price levels, they offer a tremendous value proposition. That's what common sense says. The experts say, no, ignore your common sense when buying stocks, but yet you look at the historical data, And it doesn't support the experts. It supports common sense. So I've been telling people, you know, I was telling people for a long time, you know, people are telling you you should have a 60% allocation, 70, 80, you know, something like that. And I was saying, no, no, no. I said, it looks like maybe 20% would make sense, maybe 25. You know, if you're a daredevil, maybe 30, but it's hard to make a case for an allocation more than 30. And I personally was going with zero because my personal financial circumstances don't permit a lot of risk. And so I've been going with zero, going back to 1996. But since the price crash, I've changed my tune. Since the price crash, we're now at a fair value, not at low. Some people say stocks are on sale. That's not so. But we're now at fair value, which means stocks offer a solid long-term value proposition. Doesn't mean we're not going to have another huge price drop. I think we probably will. But 10 years out, if you buy stocks today, the odds are on your side that you'll get at least a decent return over 10 years. Although it might be a very rocky 5 years or 8 years, at the end of 10 years, you're probably going to be okay. Maybe better than okay. Maybe a lot better. But at least you're probably not going to lose your shirt if you invest in stocks today. And you might do a lot better than that. So the probabilities have been changed. So it hit me, and I say that at the beginning of every podcast. I have this little, you know, talk at the beginning, which is pretty much standard. And I always say that the P10 level today is, it's ever since the crash, I think the lowest it went was 12, and the highest was 16. It's been between 12 and 16, and I usually it's 14, 15. And I say, you know, stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. So it hit me this morning. I'm thinking, well, I was telling people stocks were bad from 1995 through the first part of 2008. From September 2008 until April 2009, I've been telling people stocks are good. And the problem, of course, is that a lot of people see it just the other way. They, you know, before the crash, they thought stocks were groovy, and now they're scared to death, and it's all mixed up. And the thought hit me, if what I say is true, that stocks were bad before, and that they're good now, you know, maybe not the best they've ever been, but they're good. And they were very bad before. Was the price crash really so bad a thing? Now, I argued in a podcast that I recorded, I think, on New Year's Day. I argued in one that 2008 was a good year for stocks because prices dropped. So the long-term value proposition went way up. And I said, you know, I don't recall the exact title of the podcast, but it was something like, 2008 was a great year for stock investors. Let's hope 2009 is not a repeat. And the joke was that 2008 really was good. Nobody thinks it, but it was because prices got returned to normal. However, we don't want to see a repeat because a repeat would mean another huge drop. And now we're already at fair value. We don't need another huge drop. But it hit me. If you really believe that, Rob, shouldn't you be able to show that with your latest calculator, the investment strategy tester, that shouldn't you be able to show that stocks, you know, for valuation-informed indexers, obviously, it was better. It was good that the price crash came, because for those who were out of stocks or were going with a 20% allocation, now we can increase our allocation, so we missed out on the price crash, you know, where we were exposed to it in a minimal way. And now we get the benefits of the lower prices. So in that case, it's easy to see how the price crash was a good thing. But what if that's not your scenario? What if that's not your circumstance? In other words, what if you're one of the millions who listened to the experts and were heavily invested in stocks before the crash? If it's really true what I'm saying, shouldn't it be true that even those people are not that much worse off today? In other words, you suffered the price crash. It seems like a bad thing, but maybe it's not as bad as it seems. And if that's true, I would sure like to get that message out, because if it's not as bad as it seems, it would seem to me, if we could get that message out, that a lot of the doom and gloom would pass from the scene and people would regain confidence in the stock market. And if people regained confidence in the stock market, our economy could get back on its feet. People would regain confidence in their ability to retire, you know, on time. And they would start spending again, and the economy would recover. So this seems to me to be potentially big news. So I went to the calculator, and lo and behold, the calculator says that it's true. The calculator says that if you're somebody who lost a good bit of money in the stock crash, you haven't really lost anything. You haven't. It may be that you're a little better off today than you were before the price crash. That's what I'm going to argue in this podcast. The time value of money in stocks. Now, I want to describe those findings to you from the calculator. And so let me just describe how the calculator works so I can report the findings and you'll have some idea what I'm talking about. I actually did two tests on the calculator. I may not have time to get through the second one, but the first one's the one that matters the most. I'll first describe the calculator, and I hope what you'll do is go to the calculator and play with it. You know, enter the scenario I describe, and then enter some of your own numbers, and see how it works, because that's how we learn. You won't learn by listening to me tell you how stock investing works in the real world. That can give you some clues. But by what you really need to learn, humans learn through repetition. And so if you know, I go to these calculators almost every day. And of course, I read articles every day. I write podcasts, you know, I record podcasts, things like this. It's that constant repetition that helps me develop what I call X-ray vision. An understanding of how investing works, contrary to what 90% of the experts have been telling us for the past 30 years or so, the passive investing model. So I think the best thing for you to do is to, you know, listen to what I say, I hope, but then go to the calculator and check it out yourself. And the calculator's at the website. It's called the Investment Strategy Tester. And when you go to the calculator page, there will be default results. You will need to push a button there that you'll see that says back to choose function page, and then I have some instructions there at the default results, and it'll tell you what to do. But I need to tell you what to enter, what numbers to enter to generate the results that I generated. But first, let me tell you what the calculator does. We have four calculators at the website. It's John Walter Russell who deserves the credit for the statistical work. So if you want to see the statistical work that was used as the engine for the calculators, please go to his website. Tons of great material there. What John does is he uses the historical stock return data, usually from 1920 forward. And he uses a regression analysis, which is a statistical term, a common statistical technique. And he uses it to find out the effect of valuations. And then all the work that John and I do is aimed at telling people how much of a difference the valuation level that applies on the day you make your stock investing, how much of a difference that makes the day you make your stock investment. Because, see, passive tells you to ignore it. Passive tells you just don't pay any attention. And passive is wrong, in Rob Bennett's opinion. You know, Check it out. Don't go by what I say, but that's my strongly held opinion based on the work I've done. Now, what the calculator does is we allow you to set up different parameters for a strategy or a scenario. And then to compare up to four, you can compare up to four scenarios. And in this case, I compared just two. And so I'll give you the numbers you have to enter to create the two scenarios. But what the calculator does is it will take each of those scenarios and run 1,000 tests, 1,000 30-year return sequences following the strategy identified. And there will be 1,000 different results. And then the calculator will illustrate for you what the odds are of various outcomes, good outcomes and bad outcomes. And for each scenario, there will be four color bars, a green bar, a blue bar, a yellow bar, and a red bar. The green bar shows you the best 250 results out of the 1,000 tests done. And the tests are all return sequences that are consistent with how how stocks in the U.S. have always performed in the past, and a broad index. The blue bar are the results from 250 through 500. The yellow bar are the results from 500 through 750. And the red bar, the results from 750 through 1,000. So by looking at these color bars and comparing the color bar for the first scenario to the color bar for the second scenario, you can get a sense of which scenario is going to give you better results. Now, a worst-case scenario for one might be, might be really bad, even though generally the results for that scenario are good. You know, so you can't look at just one of the color bars. You sort of have to look at all of them. But you can see, if the green bar goes up much higher, you can say, well, the best result under this scenario is better than the best result for the other. And then if the worst result is also not as bad, you can say, well, the best is better and the worst is not as bad. So that's a pretty convincing case that scenario is a better scenario. And we give you results for what's likely to happen 5 years out, what's likely to happen 10 years out, 15 years out, 20 years out, 25 years out, and 30 years out, because it's not always the same. So you can get a sense of how things, what sort of results you're likely to get at different time periods, what the probabilities are. We can never tell you precisely what's going to happen. You see, that cannot be done, so we don't try to do it. But what we try to do is give you the odds of different outcomes, give you the probabilities. And knowing the probabilities, if the odds are 90% you're going to have a bad result, well, you don't want to have a lot of your money in invest it under that scenario. But if 90% are good, you might say, yeah, I want to have most of my money. The odds are I'm going to do well. So I compared two scenarios. And what I wanted to do was to see whether having a one-third drop in your portfolio from before the crash to today was really that bad a thing for an investor, middle-class investor. And I assumed one-third because, stocks, they weren't doing well from 2000 all the way through 2008, but they weren't losing a lot. They were sort of just dead money for that 8 or 9 year period. And then in September, there was a big, the drop started before. It started about a year before, but September there was a big drop, and overall the drop has been a little over 50%. But most people did not have all their money in stocks. If you had 100% in stocks, you suffered a 50% loss, but most of us did not. So I wanted to check a one-third drop, a drop of 33% of your portfolio value, which I think is more or less typical. So I created scenario one has a $100,000 portfolio. Scenario two has a $150,000 portfolio. So scenario two is, let's say that's how much you had in stocks before the crash, $150,000. And now you've lost one third, so you only have $100,000 in your portfolio. Are you worse off? Now, the first reaction everybody's going to have is, well, yeah, I'd rather have 150 than have 100. You know, what were you, nuts? Of course I'd rather have 150,000 than have 100. And these numbers obviously work at any level. You could compare 300,000 to 200, which is a loss of one-third. You can compare 600,000 to 400,000, a loss of one-third. You know, you can use any variation, any multiplier. So what I am arguing in this podcast is you are not any worse off with one-third less money. And it sounds crazy. If you're coming at it from the passive investing mindset, it sounds bonkers. But I think it stands up to scrutiny. The idea is makes sense from a common sense standpoint, and the historical data backs it up. I think it stands up. Why is it? How can I say that you're if not better off, at least as well off with $100,000 as you were before the crash with $150,000? You're just as well off because you didn't lose that money in isolation. Something else happened at the same time as you lost the $50,000. What else happened? The other thing that happened is the valuation level for stocks changed dramatically. Now, that's a good thing. That's an exciting thing. Because when stocks are priced at lower levels, your long-term return is much higher. Now, this is something in which I'm not even in disagreement with the big-name experts. Most of the experts say that. If you listen to people like Bogle and Buffett and Malkiel, they'll come out and they'll tell you. They'll say, yeah, people should be investing in stocks today because prices are better and therefore the return is better. So they don't deny what I'm saying. The part that they don't tell you is, and they should, is that if prices are better today, they had to be worse before. You see, it can't be better now and not have been bad before. Or it can't be too much better unless it was bad before. So they leave that out. I think primarily for marketing reasons. They don't want to focus on how bad it was before, because if they had let people know how bad an investment choice stocks were before the crash, people wouldn't have been buying stocks. And most of the people who are quoted in the papers as quote-unquote experts have ties to the stock-selling industry. It's very hard for them to give the straight story. But they do acknowledge that stocks are a better deal today than they were before. Well, let's check it out. How much better are they exactly? What this calculator tells us, and all the calculator does is report what the historical data says, what the calculator tells us is stocks are sufficiently better today. They're so much better today that the improvement in your long-term return that results from the improvement in the value proposition, the long-term value proposition, is enough to make up for the entire loss that you suffered in the stock crash. Here's what the numbers show. I look at 5 years out. First, let me tell you what I compared. I compared $100,000. Scenario one's $100,000. Scenario two is $150,000. So scenario two is your pre-crash portfolio. Scenario one is your post-crash portfolio. One-third less. All the other assumptions are the same. I plugged in a 3.0 rate for TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. The 3.0, it doesn't have to be in TIPS. It's just, it's the alternative to stocks. Whatever you're invested in with the money that's not in stocks. So it could be certificates of deposit. Anything that you think you can get a 3% real return on. I used a 70% stock allocation because I know a lot of people that used allocations somewhere around that. Some had 60, some had 80, 70, I don't know. It's slightly on the high side, I think, but it's not too far on the high side. A lot of people had that. Probably not most retirees, but a lot of people, young people, a lot of them have gone with 70% allocations. I took no withdrawals because I'm not doing this for retirees. So the assumption here is you're in the accumulation stage, not the distribution stage. You're not retired. You're not taking money out of your portfolio. But I used different valuation levels, different PE10 levels. For the post-crash scenario one, I used a 14 PE10, 14 normal. Now, I want to be careful. I want to point this out. I could have used 14 bear. And today we're in 14 bear. The difference is a 14 PE10 level is generally a good PE10 level. But stocks will not perform today, in all likelihood, the way they would if we were 14 on the way up instead of 14 on the way down. And the reason is emotion. Investor emotion today is extremely negative and dark. And so we're likely to go down more than we are to go up. Whereas 5 years from now, if we suffer another price crash, we might be at 14 on the way up. So I used 14 on the way up. Now, that's not accurate for what's going on today. So these numbers don't strictly apply today. However, if the reason I used it for a reason, if we could get the word out about valuation-informed indexing, I think we could turn today's 14 bear into a 14 normal. In other words, the only thing that makes it a 14 bear is that everybody's scared to death about stocks. But if we explain to people why they lost so much of their money and what they need to do to make sure it never happens again, you would reassure people. People would regain confidence in the markets, and that would turn us from a 14 bear into a 14 normal. In other words, the difference between bear and normal is not an economic difference. There is nothing wrong economically today that would stop stocks from going up. The only thing, the trouble today is people still believe in passive investing. And if you believe in passive investing, you're sort of doomed because you can't ever have confidence in something that defies common sense. And so people are emotionally distraught, and that emotion is gradually affecting stock prices, but not immediately. So it's affected them enough now to bring us down to a 14 P10 level, but it may take another 3 years or 4 years to get us down to 8, and then we'll work our way back up. But if we educated the public, I think in a year we could be at a 14 normal. So I think the numbers I'm using here are realistic, but they're realistic only if we get the word out on rational investing. Why passive investing doesn't work, why rational investing is the model of the future. But I used 14 normal. Just if you're trying to replicate this, that's what you have to do in scenario one. Scenario two, the pre-crash, I used 32 bear, and prices were all over the, you know, they were always insanely dangerous from January 95 through September 2008. They were always dangerous. There were times when they were not as high as 32. There were other times they were higher than that. The high point, they were at 44. I remember not about a year before the crash, they were at about 29. So 32, I don't think is a crazy number. It's certainly a high number. So I don't think it's unfair to use 32. But if I, the calculator doesn't allow me to put in 29, so I couldn't use 29. I think the next choice was 26. So I used 32. I went with a higher number. But you know, that makes the point more dramatically, to be sure. So if you want to replicate this, you have to use 32 as your P10 level on scenario two. So what I'm doing is I'm saying, are you better to have a $150,000 portfolio pre-crash when the P10 level was somewhere in the neighborhood of 32, or are you better to have a 50% loss, a 35% loss and have only $100,000 in your portfolio, but have a set of 14 normal PE10 level? Which is better? The calculator tells us at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, and 30 years. Well, at 5 years, it says, at 5 years out, it says that the pre-crash portfolio is better. There's obviously some overlap, but the lucky scenarios give you a better result at 5 years. And the worst case scenario is worse, a little, not too much, but a little bit worse for the first scenario, the post-crash scenario. So at 5 years, you get what you would expect. But see, that's because short-term timing doesn't work. In 5 years, we may still be struggling with all this. So, you know, these emotional effects take a long time to work themselves through the market. So at 5 years, you may still be worse off. Not necessarily, you won't necessarily be worse off, but you could be. It's a good chance you will be. Odds are actually better than 50%. You will be. So if all you care about is 5 years out, then, you know, you've indeed suffered a big hit. It, you know, if you were a valuation-informed indexer, you only had 20% in stocks, you didn't suffer that big a hit. But if you were a passive investor, you suffered a big hit, and that's a fact. And 5 years out, that's still true. But at 10 years out, it's no longer true. At 10 years out, the worst-case scenario is just about identical. It's you know, in the graphic I'm looking at, it's identical. The best case scenario is slightly better for the $100,000 portfolio, the post-crash portfolio. In other words, you should be happier today about where you're going to be in 10 years. Say you're 10 years from retirement today. You should be happy that we had a price crash. I know you're not going to believe me, most of you. I know that. It's going to blow your mind. But I'm saying it. You can debate it, but I believe it. You're better off. You got less money. 35% less. You lost a third. Sounds bad. But while you were losing money, the market was returning to fair value, and so your 10-year return starting today is going to be so much better than what it was going to be pre-crash, that in 10 years, the odds are you'll be better off than you would have been if we hadn't suffered the price crash. That's the claim. At 15 years, that's more so. Not a lot, but a little more so. At 20 years, again, a little more so, but again, not a lot. 20 years, the midpoint is almost the same. The midpoint's just about the same. Now, you know, you might find this surprising. At 25 years, it flips back. At 25 years, the second portfolio, the pre-crash portfolio, is slightly better. Not much, but a little bit. And at 30 years, it's a good bit better. 30 years, it's significantly better. That's a little bit of a curve. But what's going on there, I believe, John Walter Russell may have something to say about it, but I, my speculation is that what's going on is stock prices go in cycles. There are bull cycles and there are bear cycles based on investor emotion. If you're going out 20 years from a 32 PE10 level, the odds are you're not going to be, you know, 32 is insanely high. The odds are you're going to have a crash within 10 years. So 20 years after the day you're at a 32 PE10 level, you're probably not going to be at a high PE10 level. The odds are against it. So the odds are your return will, or you may be getting back to it. But the point is you will have recovered in 20 years. You will have recovered in 20 years. So, or 25 years. So at 25 years, 30 years, if you're looking 25, 30 years out, being at a P10 level of 32 isn't all that bad. In 30 years, you have time to recover. You're going to have a huge crash, but you're going to recover. But at 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years, you're not going to have time to recover. So at those time periods, you're better to be going, you're better to be starting at the fair value P10 level, because you're probably going to see a lot of growth. If you're at a 14 normal PE10 level, you're probably going to see a lot of growth over the next 20 years. You might not in the next 5, but in 10 years, you're probably going to see some growth. And at 20, you're really likely to see some growth. So at 25, you might see another crash. You see? So if you're at a 14 today, fair value, 25 years out, you might be seeing another crash. So your 25-year numbers are not necessarily so good. But I focus at my website, I focus not on the 30-year numbers. All passive investing, the big problem, people always, they don't understand. How could it be that all the experts got it all wrong? And what really happened is the experts are telling us what happens at 30 years. Everything that they say about passive investing is true if you go out 30 years. My problem is I don't think that's realistic. Most of us don't live our lives in 30-year segments. We, of course, want to have a good result in 30 years, to be sure. But we also want to have a good result in 5 years, and 10 years, and 15 years, and 20 years. And so we need to know what our stock strategies are going to produce at those time periods. And that's what valuation-informed indexing is all about. With valuation-informed indexing, you can still get a great return at 30 years. In this particular test, I didn't do that because I didn't make any, I just stuck with a 70% allocation in both scenarios. I didn't make any adjustments for valuations. I didn't do any valuation-informed indexing here. I just did rebalancing, which is the passive way to go. So I was not following the strategy I recommend. I'm trying to show the passive investor that what happened is not as bad as he thinks it is. So if I had wanted to produce better results at 25 and 30 years, I would have followed a valuation-informed strategy, and that would have produced better results than the passive strategy. But I didn't do that. But even for the passives, even if you don't buy into valuation-informed indexing, even if you say, I refuse to do valuation-informed indexing, we'll not do it, Rob, forget it. What I'm demonstrating here, it's really what all the experts are saying. They're all telling you stocks are better today than they were before. Well, this graphic is telling you they're right. I'm agreeing with Bogle and Malkiel and Buffett and whoever else is saying it. Lots of people. But I'm doing it with numbers, and what I'm also showing the other side. I'm not just showing that stocks are a good long-term value proposition today. I'm also showing, I'm making a contrast. I'm showing how bad they were before the crash, because what I find fault with is how the experts encouraged us to go with high stock allocations when stocks were a horrible long-term value proposition. That's what I object to in the passive strategy. I don't object that they're telling us now stocks are a good deal, because I agree. Long term, they're not a good deal in the short term. They're very scary in the short term. But long term, I think they offer a decent long-term value proposition today. But in order to really make that point with people, you have to show them how bad they were before. It's the contrast that makes all this make sense. And what this calculator is showing is, at 5 years, you do have a problem, and that's because the emotion is so unpredictable. But at 10 years, it's going to be economic factors that are going to determine stock returns, not emotion. And at 10 years, you're actually better off having suffered this price crash than if we hadn't suffered it, believe it or not. I think that's exciting stuff. I think that's very exciting stuff. And I wish we could get the word out, because as I say, if we could get the word out, I've tried. I could use some help. But there are a lot of people who have advocated passive investing who don't want to admit they were wrong and, are very averse to the idea of people hearing about this, hearing about the realities of stock investing. But if we could get the word out, I think we could overcome this economic crisis we're in, because once people understand why they lost all their money and what they have to do so that it never happens again, I think people could regain confidence in the markets. I think we need to talk straight with people. That's what I believe. I believe that's the answer, rather than all these stimulus things. The stimulus things, my guess is there's some good and bad, but I think it's a sideshow. What matters is the emotions, the investor emotions. We need to reassure people, and this sort of data would reassure people if they knew about it, if we could get the word out. The other test that I did was similar, and I don't have it in front of me, but the other test I ran, it was a little more dramatic. In scenario one, I had $100,000, and in scenario two, I had $200,000 starting out. And again, I used a 3.0 tips number, 70% stocks in both scenarios, and no withdrawals. And in the first scenario, I used an 8 as my P10 level. I used a P10 level even lower than what we have today, half of what we have today, which may well be where we're going to end up. I think there's a good chance we're going to see another 50% price drop because of this emotion, not for any economic reasons, because we haven't talked straight with people. And when you don't talk straight with people, you foster insecurity. You foster emotion, emotional vulnerability. And I think we're going to see that coming into play over the next couple of years. So in scenario one, I went with an 8 P10 level, a very low P10 level, half a fair value. And in scenario two, I used the 32 bear, the pre-crash. And again, it showed similar results. It showed that 5 years out, the 200,000 portfolio was better, but at 10 years out, the $100,000 portfolio was better. You were actually better with $100,000. 10 years out, you're better. Starting with $100,000, you're better than starting with $200,000. If you're starting at a P10 level that's half a fair value instead of one that's double fair value. That's how much difference valuations make. And that's why, you know, the experts should have been telling us how bad the value proposition of stocks was before the crash, because this is where we get to the title of the podcast, The Time Value of Money in Stocks. We all know that money, see, this is the dimension that's missing in the conventional investing advice. As I say, a lot of it is good. A lot of the passive investing stuff is good. I consider myself the world's number one critic of passive investing. Very harsh. But the sad, tragic even, part of all this is there's a lot of good in it. The idea of middle-class investors investing in indexes rather than, not all, but most, rather than buying individual stocks, I think makes all the sense in the world. Because most middle-class investors don't have the time to research stocks effectively. The idea of tuning out the short-term noise, that's gold. The idea of keeping costs low, that's gold. The idea of sticking with a strategy long enough for it to pay off, that's gold. So there's a lot. There's a lot in the passive investing package that's wonderful. But the element that doesn't work is the passive part. The idea of staying at that same stock allocation, regardless of how prices go, that is death. That's death to middle-class investors. For two reasons. One, it produces horrible returns. Always has. Every try. It's been tried four times. Unmitigated disaster the first time. Unmitigated disaster the second time. Unmitigated disaster the third time. Unmitigated disaster the fourth time. No exceptions in the record. Not one. But secondly, It makes investors so emotional, because when you try to invest that way, you're investing in defiance of what your common sense tells you. Your common sense tells you you should be considering price, and you're not. When you don't time the market, you're blocking out price considerations, and you block out price considerations, you're betraying yourself. Excuse me. And in the long run, betraying yourself doesn't work, because it causes you to be emotionally vulnerable. It causes you to become defensive. It causes you to tune out knowledge. And, you know, I think what goes on today is 90% of the effort people put into understanding stock investing doesn't go into learning. It goes into rationalizing what they've already, the strategies they've adopted years ago. Instead of learning how stock investing works, we're blocking out learning. If we could take all these human energies and devote them to more constructive purposes. But the thing that they leave out, the passives, you know, they cite all this historical data. And of course, you know, there are studies showing what they show. It's just they leave out a dimension of the problem. What they do is, what they're really doing in all these studies is, they're showing what happens at 30 years. That's what they're doing. They either look at 30 years or they look at 1 year. Some of the studies look at 1 year and they show the timing doesn't work, and that's true. If you change your stock allocation because prices are too high, you lower your stock allocation, and you want to see results in 1 year, or you're going to give up and go back, it won't work. Every now and then it'll work. You know, if you did it in August of 2008, it worked, but the odds are against you. It's usually not going to work. 1 year is not long enough, because stocks are highly emotional. Stock investing is a highly emotional endeavor in the short term. So even though the economic realities are pushing prices down, it takes more than a year for that to happen. And you have no way of knowing whether the time you choose to lower your allocation is going to be a good time or not. If you stick with it for 5 years, then the odds are on your side. And if you stick with it for 10 years, you're almost sure to get a good result. But 1 year is not enough. So the passives do a lot of tests at 1 year. And they say, oh, timing doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work when you do it that way. But if you look at what happens for people that hold for 5 years, stick to their timing strategy for 5 years or even 10 years, then it always works. It's a big difference. Because it should always work. It must always work. because the value proposition just isn't as good when the price is high as it is when the price is reasonable. But the other thing they do is they look at 30 years. And they look at 30 years and they say, oh, don't worry about this loss because it'll come back in 30 years. But they don't say 30. They say long term. Oh, it'll come back in the long term. Invest for the long term. Well, it all depends on what you mean by long term. If you mean 30 years, they're right. What they're telling you is the truth. It will come back in 30 years. I'll vouch for it. But it won't come back in five years or 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. So the people who followed what the experts said from 1995 through 2008 suffered real losses. They didn't suffer real losses for 30 years. They suffered real losses for 5 years and for 10 years and for 15 years and for 20 years. Does that matter? I think it matters. This is why I call the podcast The Time Value of Money in Stocks. What you're doing when you follow passive investing is you're taking a big hunk of your retirement money and you're saying, here, I don't want it. Take it. I'm 35. I'm not going to retire till 65. I don't need that money for 30 years. Take it, please. I don't want it. I don't want this money in my account. Take it, please. That's what you're doing. You're pushing it out of your account. This is why the calculators at my site produce such amazing results. People look at them and they say, that the biggest problem I have is people look at them and they say, that can't be true. It can't be that good. Making this one change, considering price when you buy stocks, makes that much of a difference? Well, it does. Because money has a time value. So what the passives are doing is they're pushing all the money out of their account because they've heard this promise that they'll get it back in 30 years. And they will. The experts aren't lying, to that extent. I don't think a lot of the experts even understand this, frankly. But, or maybe they're lying to themselves as well as to you. But I will say this. A lot of the experts know that valuations is the Achilles heel. Passive investing. That's clear as clear can be because I've contacted a lot of them and they always get real nervous when you talk about valuations. I don't think they know the details, but they know there's a problem. Most of them know that. The smart ones know it. The ones I've talked to know it. They don't know it fully, but they know it on some level of consciousness. They know there's an issue there. They know that. And what you're doing is you're ensuring that you'll have bad results for 20 years because of a promise that you'll be okay at 30 years. And the promise is true, but why do you want to give up good results for 20 years? What's in it for you? That's my question. What's in it for you? What's in it for the middle-class investor? And the answer is nothing. The benefit is to the stock selling industry. When they use those 30-year numbers, it permits them to use all these marketing slogans that helps them sell stocks when they're overpriced. So when stocks are offering an incredibly poor value proposition, they can get on television and say, oh, stocks for the long run, timing doesn't work, buy and hold, all that jizz jazz. Because if anybody challenges, here's a study, look, 30 years it works. They've got a study to back it up. But they don't tell you about all the studies that show that at 5 years it doesn't work, and at 10 years it doesn't work, and at 15 years it doesn't work, and at 20 years it doesn't work. That's my beef. I want to know not only 30 years and not only 1 year, I want to know all the time periods. Because money has a time value, and when I give up those gains for 20 years, I'm giving up something of value, even if I don't retire for 30 years, because I might want to buy a house in 5 years. And having lost $100,000 from my portfolio, I may not have the, I may not feel that I can afford it to do what I want. So my life opportunities have been limited. They've been narrowed for 20 years. Or I might want to start my own business, and I can't. I might make $1 million in that business, but I can't do it. Because I lost $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000, whatever it is, depending on your age, how much you had in stocks. And yeah, I'm going to get the money back 30 years from now, but I don't want to start the business when I'm 65. Maybe I'm 35 now. Maybe I want to start it when I'm 45. But I'm not going to have the money to do it, because I lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in a stock crash that I could have protected. I could have protected my portfolio if only I had known that passive doesn't work at 5 and 10 and 15 and 20 years. It only works at 30 and at 1. Doesn't work at all the times in between. Those time periods matter. That's why all of our calculators tell you the story at different time periods. They tell you 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. So you know. And, you know, if all you really care about is 30, well, God bless you. You know, go with passive if you want. Even in that case, you're better not to go with passive, because even if all you care about is 30, if you follow a valuation-informed strategy, you will end up with more at the end of 30. You know, you can check that out with the Scenario Surfer calculator or with the Strategy Tester. You can also do it with the Strategy Tester. A different sort of thing, but you can check that concept. So even if all you care about is 30, you still can do better with valuation-informed indexing. But if all you care about is 30, it's true that the hit you'll take from following passive won't be as devastating. I often describe the results you get from passive investing as bone-crushing. If all you care about is 30, I wouldn't describe it as bone-crushing. But at 5, it's bone-crushing, and at 10, and at 15, and at 20. And I think that matters, because money has time value. You see, there's a saying, the rich get rich, the poor get poor. If you follow a valuation-informed strategy, you're always going to be, in relative terms, rich. You're always going to be richer than the passive, than if you had followed a passive strategy. The valuation-informed indexer gradually increases his wealth over time. The passive investor has these upshots. When the market becomes highly irrational, passive is a totally irrational strategy. To ignore price is totally irrational. When the market is irrational, passives do great. You know, from 95 to 2000, passive did great. But irrational never works long term. So they always get crushed in the aftermath. And that they get crushed more than they benefit. So in an overall sense, they always do worse. But it's a more of an emotional roller coaster. If you're looking for an emotional roller coaster, passive's the way to go. Because what you're doing is you're changing your risk level dramatically. When stocks went from fair value to 3x fair value, the risk of your portfolio, if you didn't change your allocation, went, I don't know, 5x greater. You know, so you're an emotional roller coaster. At one time, you're being prudent, you're taking a reasonable amount of risk, and another time, you're out there betting at your retirement money at a casino. You know, I think you could get better odds at some casinos than what people were getting at the top of this market. People who retired in January 2000 and used the retirement studies that most retirement planners today use, they had only a 1 in 3 chance of their retirement plan surviving. 30% chance. I really think it'd be possible to get odds like that in a casino if you played a safe game. Played a game where you're betting on black or something, you might have a chance at better than 30%. I don't know. I don't go to casinos, so I don't really know, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's a bet you could take that would have better odds than what you were getting with the retirement studies you get from retirement planners. The old school studies. It's an incredible statement. But if I'm wrong, please tell me where I'm wrong. I'll fix it, you know. But if I'm not wrong, please tell your friends. They need to know. Passive is, you know, it does work in 1 year, because investing is so emotional in 1 year that there's nothing a rational investor can do. Investing really is gambling in the short term, in a year or two. There's just no way to predict. So passive can work as long as it's gambling. At 30 years, it works, not because passive is such a great idea. Valuation informed works better at 30, but stocks are such a great asset class at 30 years that it overcomes the idiocy of passive investing. doesn't matter if you're passive. I mean, it does matter. You'll do better if you're rational, but passives won't do that bad at the end of 30 years. But at 5 years out, 10 years out, 15 years, 20 years, passive gets killed. And the question you need to be asking yourself is, what is in it for me? I don't see that there's anything in it for you. It may be that there's something in it for the stock selling industry. I'm personally not convinced even of that. I think a lot of people in the stock selling industry would like it if they could talk straight. But the trouble is they promoted all these marketing slogans, and now it's hard to make the switch. Once you've been saying one thing for 30 years, it looks bad when you say, oh, oops, you know, we told you exactly the wrong thing. We should have been telling you to lower your stock allocation. We should have been telling you to time the market, and we were telling you the opposite. We should have been telling you stocks were a horrible investment for the long term. We were telling you they were the best for the long term. We got it all, you know, totally wrong. That's the struggle. That's today's struggle. How do we work that out? But these numbers, they amaze even me, and I've been doing this for a long time. But they do make sense. As I say, they're right in tune with what the experts are saying. Listen to John Bogle, and he'll tell you, stocks are a better buy now than they were before the crash. You shouldn't be afraid to buy stocks. Now, I think it's disingenuous because, of course, you're afraid to buy stocks if you just lost a third of your portfolio. You know, what the heck would you think? So it's disingenuous to say, oh, you shouldn't be afraid. Of course they're afraid. Of course we're all afraid. But that's whose fault is that? It's John Bogle's fault. He was the one telling us not to lower our allocations. Go passive. That's why we're afraid. Those who were going with low stock allocations, 20%, they're not afraid. This is what they've been waiting for. This is the opportunity they've been waiting for. But if you could get past the emotion, if we could get the straight story out and get past the emotion, what we find is we're actually a little better off. Because we had this price crash. Because the price crash was devastating in a financial sense. We lost a lot of money. But it was a huge plus in getting the stock investment class back for us. Now, if you're a valuation-informed indexer, you know, you weren't... Well, you wanted stocks back. You didn't suffer the hit. You didn't suffer the... All you got were the goodies. You avoided the big crushing loss, and you got all the goodies of getting the stock class back. So I can't make passives as well off as rationals. There's nothing I can do. But what I can do is tell passives, if you can get through the emotional stuff, and that means recognizing how flawed a strategy passive is, you're not any worse off. You're actually a little better off. Because you suffered one bad thing, a big loss in money, and one good thing, a big improvement in your 10-year return from this point forward, and the improvement in your 10-year return is a little better than the loss you suffered is bad. You're slightly better off at 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years. Not bad. Not bad at all. Money has a time value, and we need to be thinking about how our investing strategies do at various time periods, not just at one or two time periods. All the passives look at is 1 year out and 30 years out. We need to be looking at 5 years out, 10 years out, 15 years out, 20 years out, because that's how we live our lives. And what you really want with your investing strategy is a smoothed out return. You're never going to be able to get it totally smoothed out. But the ultimate goal for the middle class investor is to get the return delivered by stocks, that 6% real average return, but to get it without the bumps, to get it without the 30% upside years and the 50% downside years. What you want to do is get 6% steady every year. I can't get you 6% steady every year. But as you become attuned to the rational way of thinking about stock investing, you get closer and closer to that. Because when you lose... And this is what I'm trying to teach in this podcast. When you lose money in stocks and you have a rational perspective, you don't look at it as a loss. You look at it as a loss on one side of the scale and a gain on the other, because that's true of every price drop. Every single price drop hurts you in the short term, lowers your portfolio, and helps you in the long term because it increases the long-term return from stocks. And every price increase does the opposite. Every price increase helps you in the short term. It increases the size of your portfolio and hurts you in the long term because it always lowers your long-term return. So every price change greater or lesser than a 6.5% real increase. A 6.5% real increase is what the economic factors determine, what the economic factors create. So if you're getting more than 6.5 on the upside or less than 6.5, you're changing the long-term result in a good way if it's less than 6.5 and in a bad way if it's more. And the proper way to look at your portfolio is not to look, you know, we can't help but look at the short term. We all do it. But we also should be looking at the long term. And so what I'm saying in this podcast is this crash in a long-term sense was not a bad thing. At 5 years, it is. Obviously, you know, 1 year it is. But at 10 years, you're actually all a little better off because we got out of that nightmare that we were in from 95 through the first part of 2008, where prices were so insane that we couldn't get a decent return on our money. So we need to think about investing in a different way. Not how the passives taught us. We need to think about the time value of money in stocks. That we want good returns throughout our lives, not only when we turn 65. And when we get them throughout our lives, having more money in our portfolio, having a gradual increase, opens up all sorts of life opportunities that otherwise would have been closed to us. And so this is a different way of thinking about stocks. I think a more realistic and sensible and effective and rational and emotionally balanced way to think about stocks. And I hope that it helps you feel a little better about the losses you've suffered, because we need to avoid doom and gloom. Doom and gloom is what's going to take this economy over a cliff. We need to get out this positive message that yes, passive investing messed things up bad. Passive investing has caused great human misery. Passive investing is responsible for this price crash, this economic crisis. But it's not all doom and gloom. The price crash was actually a good thing. The bad stuff was the 90s. The bad stuff was when passive investing caused prices to go to such insane levels. That's over. Let's forget about it. Let's make sure we never do it again. Let's learn what we need to learn about investing to make sure that never happens again, by all means. But let's forget about it, you know, and move forward. And if we start thinking about a forward-looking approach, we should be acknowledging to ourselves that this price crash wasn't a bad thing. It was a necessary thing. And we're all really better off. We just need to get the word out and, you know, buck each other up, overcome this emotional darkness, and let the economic factors swing into control. And the economic factors tell us stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition today. So let's try to cut through a lot of the doom and gloom that the passives are pushing on us, frankly. They'll say they're not, but it's the irrationality of the passive approach that causes all the emotion that we're being hit with today, all the negative emotion we're being hit with today. If you have some thoughts, please use that Contact Rob button on the left side of every page at the website to shoot me some of your lines. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.